I love comedy.
An accordion in a basement.
Accordion in a basement just sounds like an absolute horror to begin with. But okay. Let's kind of just get going. Thank you for everybody for being on Ride On Radio. I have two very special guests today, Larry Long and Kevin Kling. Do you mind introducing yourselves to the show?
My name's Kevin Kling, and I'm a storyteller from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And my name is Larry Long, and I'm a troubadour, educator, and kind of fun to hang around with.
Can you, Kevin?
Hang, man.
Would have put that.
I'd rather be me in this case.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Oh, we're going to have a great time tonight, folks. All right. Kevin.
Why would we want to do that?
Yeah. We're just going to do some quick biographies. Kevin, do you mind explaining your just little bit overview? I know it's like I am talking to some storytelling legends here, just about the work that you do and some upcoming projects, because we'll get to that shortly. So
sure. Well, the biggest upcoming project is a Father's Day show with Larry Long, who's fun to be with.
Yeah.
and traveling the country and the nation, telling stories and writing plays, and it's been that way for years. I'll be at the International Storytelling Festival in October in Jonesboro, and that's always a really good time. I've got a play opening here called Unraveled in September at the Open Eye Theater, and that'll be and I've got a couple other things coming up, come to my website, kevinkling.com, and there's always something going on.
All right, and Larry, who's fun to be around, you mind giving an overview of, like, your current works that we're going on? We're going to talk about the Dakota show coming up.
I just returned from Alabama,
and
I do a program, Elders Wisdom Children's Song, where we bring in elders in the classrooms, and they give their life stories to children, and then we honor them in big community celebrations. So I had a chance to go back for a 30-year reunion of my work in this town of Camp Hill, where the boxer Joe Louis is from, and the Southern Tenants Union got started. And so we had a great celebration down there. And then I've been spending a bit of time in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, and organizing festivals there. I'm a troubadour. That's what I do. And I've been writing songs over 50 years, and I'm still doing it.
Oh, wow. That's really fun. So let's kind of delve into the songwriting process, or like kind of a collaboration process, especially for this Dakota. What was the idea for this show specifically, and have you collaborated before?
We actually have done a Father's Day show. How many years ago was that? And it was up north, and we had just an incredible time, and we laughed
our
heads
off. That was up in Alexandria.
Yeah, yeah, in a parking lot. But people came. People knew it was going to be there.
And it was hard to parallel park.
While we were there.
Yeah. I mean, you were on one end, I was on the other.
Yeah, that's right.
And we both held a flag, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then we had a... I'm not sure where I'm going with this.
No, but so we did do a Father's Day. But we met. Should we go back?
Think we should.
Yeah, in the Mississippi River. We were in 1983. And Larry was with the River Revival, which you can talk about, Larry, because it was an incredible project, taking care of the river. And I was with Heart of the Beast Puppet and Mask Theater, and we were doing a circus that started up in Brainerd and went all the way to New Orleans, and mostly on the river, which Larry was on the boat that we went on.
Right. Right, the Calypso was coming up, and we called our boat the Collapso.
Yeah.
And it did finally collapse in Hickman, Kentucky.
Yeah.
And it was quite a year because I had started an organization called the Mississippi River Revival.
Yeah.
And we had festivals, all the way from Bemidji down to the Quad Cities. Mm-hmm. And I was really close to Sandy Spieler, who was a bit of the matriarch, right?
Yeah.
Behind this whole crusade. And she wanted me to go on this cruise after we had 2 months of river cleanups and festivals. And so I was the first mate on the boat that we called the Calypso.
Yeah.
And we were always like a week or two behind the production.
Yeah.
Yeah. That boat kept trying to sink and Larry wouldn't let it. And finally it won. I think it cost us more to get it out of the water than it did to buy.
The Calypso finally had its name.
Today. Yeah, it did.
I feel like a Cinco would also be a good boat name.
That would be a good one.
Oh, my family, my dad had a boat. And we're going to talk a lot about fathers and relationships. But my dad had a boat. It was called the Lunar Module. For L-O-O-N. And he was so proud of this.
Oh, good one.
It is a good one. We don't have it because it's so expensive. It was just too expensive to take care, so we got rid of it. But I remember the Lunar Module.
That's a boat. Yeah.
That is a good boat. All right. So let's kind of a little bit about the Dakota Show. So this is a storytelling show about father. It's a Father's Day special. And there's also a really cool pianist. I think Larry mentioned about this before, if you don't mind talking a little bit about the piano work.
Well, we're very fortunate to have Will Keir. Mm-hmm. He just graduated from Juilliard, and he's now the pianist for Judy Collins. And he's from St. Paul. And we've done several concerts together, so we're very fortunate to have him.
And so this will be a piano piece, and you two talking stories about Father's Day-related things, correct?
Right. He'll be supporting me on my songs,
yeah.
And then he'll also be doing some jazz pieces while Kevin recites a few stories and poems.
Ooh, that sounds so much fun.
Yeah.
So let's kind of get, this is a writing show. We're going to talk about some of the songwriting, just kind of like the writing details. How did you go about this specifically for this show? Like, oh, I'm going to write a couple songs, a couple poems. What kind of things were you thinking of?
Well, I'm starting with, I'm going to be telling stories.
Yeah.
And so this is pre-writing, but it's on the way to writing.
Yeah.
Because David Abrams, wonderful philosopher, says, tell stories to kids before writing stories with kids, because then you're conjuring worlds, not words.
Oh.
And so then when they read, these worlds are conjured. And I think that there's some truth to that, that's what you're trying to do as a storyteller, is conjure and remind people. And I mean, the best thing you can hear after a storytelling is a kid will come up and say, "You're almost as good as my grandpa."
Oh.
And then you know you nailed it.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
So I'll be telling stories and some dad stories and poems as well, yeah.
Do we have any good dad jokes coming on, do you think?
There should be some coming
on.
I mean, yeah.
It's a dad joke.
That's an oxymoron, good dad joke.
Good dad.
I mean, I'm a dad and I'm flawed.
Oh. So
I just give it my best shot.
Yeah. You know? I love Father's Day because it's one of those things, and I'm really glad that the Dakota's kind of having a showcase of this, because I know we do like Mother's, there's always Mother's Day's programs or specials, but not super often for Father's Day's, Father's Day kind of material. So I'm really excited to kind of go in and see and listen to about stories of other people's fathers, or like them as a role as a father too. That's the one thing I'm always kind of curious. Larry, you said you're a grandfather now, correct? Ooh, and a father.
I am. I have 5 grandchildren.
5?
From the age of 2 on up to 18.
Oh.
And I actually just released a collection of songs. Mm-hmm. It's called Songs for My Grandchildren. And I've written a song for each of my grandchildren with their names.
Uh-huh.
And and they put it on their Yoda card.
Mm.
And so when they go to sleep at night, they're listening to Grandpa sing to them. And what's really special for me is when I see my grandkids, they know my songs.
Oh, that's so precious.
And they want me to sing them. And so and I've written a song for all of my children, too. And so it's something I do, and I love to do it.
I kind of want to ask my dad if he can write me a song, but I don't think he can. I think, like, a relationship with my dad, like, is mostly music and radio. Like, he was a college radio DJ, and he was also into the music scene. But I mostly grew up with him playing so much Pink Floyd. And,
oh, wow.
Oh, God, what was it? King Crimson too. It's just like two. Yeah, a lot of 70s prog rock.
Yeah.
So I always like, I'll never forget, I had like an astronomy class. And it was in high school, and I was like going to my dad's like, "Dad, do you have any like astronomy themed music?" He's like, "Oh yeah, Brian Eno, here you go." And the whole class fell asleep.
Oh, yeah.
I think they were looking for something else and not like the most ambient sounding music.
I think we want you to join us on stage.
Yeah.
You're good.
Yeah. Yeah.
My Dakota appearance. Yeah, yeah. And like I do have I feel like I'm one of the a very blessed individual to have a good relationship with her dad. Yeah. So it's like me and my sister and my dad are in the same group chat. And like he lives in New York, so I don't get to see
wonderful.
Him. You don't get to see him that often, but I do call him on a weekly basis.
Where in New York?
Hudson River Valley. So he was actually born in Niagara Falls. Big Bills fan. I think that's a traumatic experience, is being born into a Bills family in of itself.
Same with Vikings. Yeah. I mean, we can commiserate
on that. Commiserate on misery on failed playoffs.
Yeah, God.
And four failed Super Bowls.
We understand.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
We know your pain.
But it's, I...
Oh, and it hurts.
And it's like what I like about Father's Day, or it's like we get to talk about like fishing stories. Like there's some very stereotypical Father's Day events.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of wanted to ask both of you, do you have any favorite stories of your dad growing up?
Yeah. And that's going to be part of the show.
Yeah, okay.
Some of the things and just some of the hits and misses about being a dad, you know, and I think that's all in there. Even a good dad, you know, misses every once in a while.
Yeah.
Those make the best stories. Mm-hmm. And
It also makes it's about being human, too. It can't be a perfect individual.
It is. Yeah. And so that's going to be part of it. There's a lot of humor. But I think part of the show, too, is, being fortunate to, you know, with all his flaws, having a dad that was really, you know, cared a lot.
Yeah.
Even though he wasn't there a lot. It was a time of, you know, back in the 60s and 70s, and just dads were hard. My dad was gone a lot, you know. Oh. And so, but I still feel really fortunate with the dad that I had. We're in an interesting time with the whole patriarchy thing, you know, because it's time to shovel that out, you know. And at the same time, you know, you don't want to throw the bathwater out with the baby.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm always like, especially now, I think I was reading an article where it's just like a lot of dads want more parental like involvement in kids, not traveling as much for work or really being a little bit more stay at home, which is like kind of an interesting shift. Because I know one of my former coworker of mine, he just had a kid and he's just like, I'm not traveling. I want to stay with my kid.
Yeah.
Like, I'm done. There's no reason for me to travel as much anymore for work.
I had the same experience. You know, I was on the road a lot as a musician.
Yeah.
I was gone 200 days a year. And I came home, and my son Jacob, who's now a paramedic for Hennepin County, you know, I came home, and I realized that I didn't know my children, and they didn't really know me. I was gone so much.
Yeah.
So I made a decision. I got off the road, and fortunately was able to get good work here, here close to home, and to be with them. And Jacob was about the same age then as I was when my father died. And I was 12 when my father passed away. And he was a Hills Brothers coffee salesman. He was on the road a lot, too.
Yeah.
So I never thought I would live beyond the 37 years of my father. And now I've doubled that down. And so I feel like every day beyond 37, I'm doing it for my dad. And I think of him often when I look in the eyes of my grandchildren and my children. I think of the eyes of my father.
Mm.
And I wrote him a song, actually, called The Eyes of My Father. And it's one of my better songs. And I couldn't get over his death until I was about 49.
Mm.
And to get over it, I had to get over the anger of his loss.
Mm-hmm.
And once I was able to put aside the anger, this song flowed through me like 30 minutes. It was already written.
Mm-hmm.
It was filled with memories that I didn't realize I had. And all of the amazing gifts that my dad had given us through the short years that he lived.
Yeah, it's a beauty. Yeah, it's a great song.
Oh God, we're definitely gonna play it on the air.
I have a live recording with me and Will Keir playing from a concert, and Billy Peterson on bass. So maybe we can play that.
I once lived was planted by my father and I when I was a kid. It was but a sapling, but now it's 60 foot tall. Giving shade to the greenhouse in the corner in the park. Walking with my father after school in the dark. You're my favorite son, my dad laughed, but Dad, I'm your only one. The eyes of my father, oh, they're looking down on me. His hair was red and curly, not a wrinkle in his pants. He had a way of talking that made everybody laugh. Taught me how to fish and how to play baseball. Sold coffee for a living, chain smoking cigarettes. The suits that he wore, he had them tailored by the best. He looked like a million, though we just made ends meet, that's all. My father, oh, they're looking down on me. He was raised in the city. After school, he got chased home by a gang of children that wouldn't leave my dad alone. Until he decided to fight back each time he'd fall. He fought in the Pacific back in World War II on a big battleship, and when the war was through, came home and got married to a girl from Des Moines, my mom. Snap his belt, I knew it was time for bed. Drinking pots of coffee at midnight, he stared at the wall. Had a hard time talking about what he felt inside till the day he took me driving to share what was on his mind. Man don't live forever, one day, son, I'll be gone. The eyes of my father, oh, they're looking down on me. Every corner grocery owner in the city, it's been said, brought food to the doorstep for the family of Red. No one could believe it when they got the news. This man who helped people in better health than he, this man who never missed a game I played in Little League. It's not the kind of work you do, son, it's who you are. The eyes of my father, oh, driving to that greenhouse in the park with his grandson to share with him my heart. Beside that maple tree now standing 60 foot tall. For years I was angry at your grandpa 'cause he died. Now I see that love of laughter in your eyes. You're my favorite son, I laugh, but Dad, I'm your only one. The eyes of my father.
Let's continue our little fun conversation because actually, now I'm trying to think. When my dad also did travel a lot for work, when we lived in Pittsburgh, he traveled out to California quite a bit. And this was at the time where Zoom wasn't a thing yet. This was early 2000s. And so, like, I think we were kind of the forefront of, like, Skype. Yeah, it was Skype at the time. Skype calls and everything else, which thankfully was able to allow us to have a connection. But we'd always be like, all right, we have to call Dad. And do these other kind of things. And then thankfully he left that company. But it was hard for him, he said. He said it was very difficult. And I think for a lot of men, you had to be kind of stoic to, like, oh, you have to be the provider. You have to travel. Yeah. You have to do this. And there's an emotional toll of leaving your family and not seeing your kids grow that I don't think is really talked about as much. And it's getting talked a little bit more now, thankfully.
Yeah, I remember my dad giving it a good try. He'd come back. And he said, oh, I'm going to coach this year, coach your little league team. And I'd be out there and I'd look down and he's got on his wingtips, you know. He didn't have a pair of tennis shoes. It's like,
that was my dad, too.
It's like, my dad, too. Black socks and wingtips. No,
that's what my dad had. He came to little league games with Bermuda shorts and black socks and wingtips.
My dad didn't even have a clue on how to play baseball when he was our coach. He did not have a single clue, you know? Oh, God. It was great. We were so proud. Yeah.
God, my dad did my sister's hockey coach. And unfortunately, he's a good hockey player. I think grilled her a little too hard. And then she switched over to lacrosse. And I think a part of that was so that my sister would not get grilled as much. Because my dad didn't know how to play lacrosse. He's like, I don't know how to get involved in this.
That never stopped him.
Yeah, no. Shouted like all the games. And way too much critiquing on her running form. I feel bad.
We'd go fishing with our neighbors up in the Boundary Waters. And you could hear our boat across the lake because we were dropping the anchor in the bottom and yelling and dropping. My dad's glasses would fall off his face in 2 minutes, right in the drink. And so you could just hear us. And we'd come in and all the neighbors would just had it with our, you know, with our fumbling and hold. And then my brother would hold up this huge stringer of fish.
Yeah.
We had the best luck. And it wasn't from skill, but we would just catch all these fish. We would laugh our heads off because we were the worst.
Oh, my God.
The worst fishermen. And that was fun.
My favorite story of my dad, this is so silly, but we grew up, that side of is Canadian. And so we would go across the border to Canada to go to our cottage. We didn't call them cabins, called them cottages in Canada. And we went to the duty free, and I'll never forget. It was my mom, my sister, and I were just walking around the duty. We're at like 5 a.m. because we're trying to escape Toronto traffic.
Yeah.
Some dumb hour. And my dad's holding up like this wine bottle, and it has like chunks of fruit in it. I don't know what it was. And the reason why, you know, it's chunks of fruit because my dad dropped it in the middle of the aisle, says a cuss word like, oh, blank. And then me and my sister and my dad were all just looking around. I was like, we don't want to be associated with this man who's out in the wine duty at like 5 a.m. But like, it was just like a slip and fall. But like, he was always kind of a klutzy guy. And one of my favorite stories of my dad is like, he's a yapper. He is the biggest yapper. Mm. And if you talk to him, you're going to get stuck in a conversation for 15 minutes and you're not going to leave. That's the problem. Because I remember we were out in Montana. I'm like, where's Dad? And he's like, oh, he's talking to like one of the workers. And I'm like, okay, we're going to be here for another 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So you're not going to escape.
I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly how being there and having your dad gabbing away. My dad would, he'd lock in people all the time.
Lock in. Yeah. Because That's like one of the things I'm pretty excited for. Like the Dakota has like that Father's Day special. Is that something that periodically happens? Is this a reoccurring thing for them, or?
I don't know. It's our first time of doing it, and you know, Kevin and I had a great performance at Hennepin County Museum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that is that the correct name?
Yeah. It was. That was a blast.
And it went so well that we decided we wanted to do this because. Okay. I perform at the Dakota with a group called American Roots Review with Robert Robertson, J.D. Steele. It's an 8-piece band, and it's such a lovely stage. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be really exciting to have to be on that stage with only a couple of us instead of 8 people.
Yeah,
you know, I'll be able to move around more.
Yeah,
you know, we could really move.
There's not a lot of wing on that space in the Dakota. I mean, you're usually jamming at sardines up there.
But they got a baby grand piano.
Oh, it's
which
beautiful.
Which is going to be
it
great.
Is. That is.
It's that Steinway, right?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a beautiful piano. Good.
That space is, and I was surprised because I've seen such wonderful jazz there and all kinds of different music. But I'm excited to be there with Larry to do this intimate show because the space really lends itself to that. And yet, this is going to be a good opportunity to really feel that intimacy in that room.
This is true, yeah. Because Dakota doesn't—I don't know what the house count is, but it's like it's not a large venue.
About 250.
Yeah,
300.
It's perfect. It's perfect for this.
Yeah. And I love the sound quality there. Every time I've gone there, the sound is always just on point.
Yeah,
it's such a beautiful space. So is this the first time like a storytelling has been in the Dakota, or like have you ever performed at the Dakota for storytelling kind of shows?
Yeah, a few times, and it always has just gone really, really well. It really lends itself both to the storytelling, but also the music that we're going to do. It's that, and with the jazz, I just love this 3-pronged approach we're going with Larry's wonderful folk, and his music just goes right to your heart. And then, with Will, I can't wait to see what that does. That's, you need something to stir it up. And I think Will's the stir stick on this one.
Will is just one of the most extraordinary musicians in the area. And he's somewhat pretty unknown.
Yeah.
You know, because he's young. He's in his early 20s. And, when he finished, his schooling at Juilliard in New York, he got swept up by Judy Collins.
Oh,
and
wow.
And now he's touring the whole country. And we were doing a folk jazz fusion through the bassist Billy Peterson, who's an incredible jazz bassist. He connected me with Will, and he said, "I want to connect you with Will because he's going to change your life."
Mm-hmm.
And he did. But then Will said to me, he said, "I would have never gotten a gig with Judy Collins if I hadn't worked with you as a folk musician." Because he didn't know how to do that fusion.
Oh.
And so, if I was good enough, I'd be a jazz musician. But I do folk music because that's what I do. But bringing together jazz and folk puts me into a state of bliss and happiness. Mm. And then to be with Kevin.
Yeah.
Something always happens. It does.
We never know when it's going to happen.
No.
No, but when it does, it does.
Yeah, we know it did.
Yeah. And then it's gone.
Yeah.
And then we have to wait for the next time.
It is. That was like at the Hennepin Museum. Yeah. It was just like, what just happened? And it always does. That's why, sometimes it's just this chemistry gets together and, you just can't beat it. You can't. There's nothing like it.
On air or in-person chemistry on stage is, especially in a small intimate space, that just sounds so much fun.
It is.
It's these small mistakes.
Yeah.
That are seemingly mistakes that become like the gift of the night.
Yeah.
You know, like you miss a lyric and all of a sudden you make up one that takes you somewhere else, and then it creates an incredible laughter and response as you bounce out of it.
And and either one of us is good at mistakes, but together. There's a lot to work with.
Oh, my Lord. Let's talk about mistakes.
Yeah. Well, no, this reminds me of my favorite Laurel and Hardy, where they come to move the piano. And the guy goes, "Hey," he goes, "I only hired one worker." And Stan goes, we can do the work of one. So, I think Larry and I, that's how we operate.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I mean, we haven't talked about what we're going to wear yet. But, but we're going to keep that kind of quiet, right? Surprise people.
I think for the better of every. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. The first thing I think of is, I think it's the ice fishing play that you, Kevin Rowe. Yeah, that's like first thing I think of is like an ice fishing outfit. Because like if I think of my dad, I think of outdoor gear and one too many plaids and like worn out 80s band t-shirt.
With wingtips.
Yeah, with wingtips. Because that's, oh, gosh, that sounds... Yeah, but kind of want to follow up with, do you guys celebrate Father's Day traditions in your own households or anything fun?
No, you must, Larry, or something.
Yeah. I mean, there was a period of time that I was feeling kind of lonesome about it because Mother's Day was such a big deal.
Yeah.
And I turned to my wife and said, what about me?
Oh, how'd you get in here?
I had something to do with it. and then it became a conscious effort in the family that they would both be, as you talked about earlier, you know, Father's Day to be a time to spend time with the kids.
Yeah.
And I do it, you know, and the kids reach out to me in a good way. And I mean, regretfully, my son, who's a paramedic, is working. And he really wanted to be there for the celebration. I'll be singing a song for him.
Oh, okay.
I wrote a song for him called Lucky Jacob.
Mm-hmm.
And I have his, on the recording, I actually have his fetal heartbeat.
Oh, wow.
How'd you get that?
Well.
I'm very curious.
My wife and I are pretty close. I just put a microphone out. It's amazing how things work out.
Yeah.
but our children were born at home.
Oh, okay.
So we had midwives. And that was at a time when it was pretty much against the law.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was here in Minneapolis. And when our son was born, it was a tough birth, but it was nothing to, you know, because of midwives.
Yeah.
So we took him into the hospital. And the doctors was like really upset that we had Jacob at home, very upset. And then the nurses would take us aside. It was like the Underground Railroad.
Oh.
And they go, we're midwives too, but we don't tell them.
Yeah. And then
So anyway, it was I was a part of the birth of all my children, and there's no more sacred moment than to be at that place of the birth of your child. And it really gives a man great respect for women.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's, you know, the separation of men from the birth of their children, I think, has been a great violation.
Yeah.
And that's changed, you know, because of strong women and men that have kind of brought about that change. But I had a funny moment.
Yeah.
Can I share it?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's radio.
Yeah, this friend of mine went to Hebrew school with Bob Dylan, and his name was Larry Keegan, and he was a quadriplegic, and a really dear friend of Bob's, and he was a dear friend of mine. Larry Keegan, Bob would take him on tour with him, and then he would get recordings of Dylan, you know, records before they came out.
Mm-hmm.
And so he gave me a recording from Bob, and it had this song called Ring Them Bells.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so beautiful. I loved it. And I said, I'm going to surprise my wife during childbirth.
Oh, no, Larry.
Bad idea. She's starting to go into labor, and I go, nice thing. And I put it on, and here's Dylan ringing the bells, and she screams, I cannot give birth listening to Bob Dylan. And the F word came flying out. And I said, I'm sorry. Don't ever do that to me again.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it was good intention.
It was good intention.
Yeah. You should have run that by somebody.
I never thought about it. I did. Afterwards, I thought it was a great idea.
Well,
I'm sorry, Jackie, that I talked about it.
I think people are still on her side on that one. I don't think you did anything.
I cannot give birth to Bob Dylan. Listening to Bob Dylan is the funniest line I think I've ever heard. Just like one line.
Come to think of it, yeah. I couldn't either. So we'll skip Bob Dylan too.
I just realized my dad does not like Bob Dylan. As he never was into folklore, kind of Americana music growing up. But I remember, and I would say my dad's like a very open-minded man when it comes to music or genres. He'll listen to like my crappy Y2K pop music, but like Bob Dylan goes on the air is just like, I don't like this. I'm sorry. I remember driving in Montana, and I think it was I don't know what tune it was. But we're driving along, he's driving, and the Bob Dylan tune came on. He's just like, I want to drive us off this cliff right now.
Yeah.
just like this really, I don't know what it is, but I just find that very funny.
He's not an acquired taste.
Yeah.
You know or you don't.
Yeah. It was interesting when you said that your father would play Pink Floyd.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
I mean,
so much Pink Floyd.
You know, I'm 74. Yeah. And my dad would go around the house singing Frank Sinatra and Tony Bennett. He loved Dean Martin.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
You know, and the Rat Pack. It's a generational thing.
Yeah, and I think my dad was also like, he got arrested during, when he was 14 for playing Black Sabbath too loudly on a guitar from like a noise complaint.
Nice.
And he had to call my mom because the police stole his bike. And he's like, can you come pick me up?
Oh,
stuck
nice.
Stuck his bicycle in like Western New York because he played Black Sabbath too loudly.
It sounds like a fun guy.
Yeah.
I got in trouble in school. My mom used to design T-shirts. And she did Alice Cooper's tour.
Oh, my God.
And I got sent to the principal's office in eighth grade for wearing an Alice Cooper T-shirt. And I was like, my mom designed it.
I feel like that gives you like some sort of better credentials to wear a T-shirt.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Oh, my God. I'm also kind of curious, what other, so we got the Dakota show coming up, and then you mentioned Open Eye Theater, correct, Kevin?
In September.
In September, and then you were doing the American Storytelling?
That'll be in Tennessee, so that's a bit of a drive.
Yeah. What's the American Storyteller collect? Kind of curious if you want to talk about that a little bit.
It's the National Storytelling Festival, and it's every year, first week of October. And it's it's a really wide variety of storytellers, and it's incredible. Yeah. And this little town that usually has about a couple of thousand people, about 20,000 land into this town.
It's great.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's an international festival?
It is. Yeah. There's a few people from overseas, but it's mostly American. And it's interesting what we've done to the art of storytelling is like, it is kind of like the folk and the a lot of jazz movement in the United States took traditional forms, but we had to turn them into our own because we aren't of this land. We aren't, you know, the European had to create a conglomerate of, you know, and so there's a lot of personal stories, a lot of different kinds of, but of course then there are a lot of different native tellers. There's a lot of different African-American, all the different kinds of storytelling as well, but it is really cool how we've taken a form, as we did with jazz, and did it with storytelling and with you see it in poetry slams and other things. What Americans do with things because we have to. We're creating our tradition at the same time as we're living it.
Oh, I love that last line you said. Creating the tradition the same time as living it. Because I just think of like Father's Day and like traditions like that, familial traditions, like stuff that I have thrown away, something that my dad did. And I'm like, no, I don't want to do this moving forward with my life. And I want to incorporate something else. But then me and my dad, we would do our other traditions as well. Mm-hmm. Just like mm-hmm. between the two of us or with my sister involved. And I think that's really beautiful too, because it's not loud, it's not braggadocious, but it's like very small. Like the routine of my dad making coffee every morning, and he has a very specific setup of coffee. And then I was like, until I went over to another person's house, and I'm like, oh yeah, my dad kind of just does that weird little morning ritual.
Oh my God, that's what I do.
Yeah. He has like a very specific mug collection, yep. Very specific drip pour method. And I'm like, I never, until I visited like another friend's father or like, and like saw a different household, quite frankly, I'm like, oh, I didn't realize we did that.
Yeah. Well, your father is so fortunate to have a daughter like you.
Oh, thank you so much. That is the sweetest thing anyone's ever heard. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, really? Yeah. Really? How wonderful.
Yeah, and I try to make a trip every year, give or take. He writes me letters. That's the thing I've always kind of noticed, too. Like, he'll I keep every single one of his handwritten letters. So when I graduated, community college, undergrad, graduate school, he'll write me letters. And he has very good handwriting. It's like his mom's. Thankfully, it's not like my grandmother's, because she also wrote in like very intensive cursive that I can't read, because it's like a very fine, hard to read cursive. And I'm like, oh, man, that's so dated. And I'm struggling. But he has very nice handwriting, which is awkward because he has a doctorate degree. And those normally don't correlate to each other at all. Normally it's like chicken scratch. So I did find out like going back into audio recordings or like phone calls and written letters as a way to like kind of preserve your relationship with the people that you love to be a better way than like email or texting. I prefer that a lot more now. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a generational thing where it's like, oh, you know, millennials or Gen Z just can't go on the phone and call. And I'm like, no, I'm going to call you. I'm going to come on and call you. Cause like, I think that was something that I really liked about like the older generation of like my grandpas that they did that my dad didn't do. That my dad does. Or it's like, definitely my dad calls a lot more, because I remember him telling me a story when he moved out to California for the first time. His dad never called him.
Oh.
And so he's doing this thing. He's like, no, I don't want to be like my grandfather, my dad. I want to call my kids. Mm-hmm. And so he does that periodically.
Oh, and where is he living? You said before.
New York.
Okay.
He's based out of New York. So nice. 1 hour time zone difference.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of how things work. It seems, you know, how to turn a curse into a blessing.
Yeah.
And then the mistakes that are made, you know, from your parents, you move on, you go, well, I learned from that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you learn from a mistake or a tragedy and you turn it into a gift, it's not a tragedy. You know, it becomes a point of wisdom and a point of learning. So I think that's wonderful. I was really close to Pete Seeger.
Oh,
I mean, we were really dear friends. And I actually put one of his songs mm-hmm. To music with him, with his spoken word. And in some ways, that's what Kevin and I will be doing.
Yeah.
It's a Well May the World Go. And Pete, I spent a year on this recording doing editing of his voice mm-hmm. from a 2-hour interview, and it takes you on a journey with his father and then into his upbringing and into his life mm-hmm. for why he had the values that he lived by. It could be worth listening to.
Yeah. Wow.
Pete Seeger, born May 3rd, 1919, and it is now October 24th, I think, 1996, and we are sitting at the table in 526 Texas Street, San Francisco, Larry Long and me. My father said, the truth is a rabbit in a bramble patch, and all you can do is circle around it and point and say it's somewhere in there. You can't put your hand on it and touch it. You can't put your hand on that furry, quivering body. All you can do is say it's somewhere in there. uh, tell you right now, I was greatly influenced by my father. I was 5 years old. They gave me a dime, said go next door and buy something that cost a nickel. But when I was at the store, I meet a neighbor boy. I said, oh, Pete, you got a nickel left over. Why don't we buy a piece of candy? We'll share it. I said, well, I'm supposed to bring it back. Oh, tell him it cost 10 cents. Well, at age five, I didn't know any better. We bought the candy and shared it. And when I got back, said it cost 10 cents. My father got down on his knees in front of me and held both my hands. He said, Peter, you know it didn't cost 10 cents. Don't you know you never have to lie to us? You never have. We love you. And then I bought a piece of candy. He says, you could have bought the candy. That would have been all right. But you never have to lie to us. And it was the most important lesson I guess I ever got in my life.
Well, may the skiers turn, swimmers churn, lovers burn. Peace may the generals learn when I'm far away. Well, may the world go, the world go, the world go. Well, may the world go when I'm far away.
A draftee in the days of the Vietnam War wrote me how he was at bayonet practice. And the sergeant hollers, what is the spirit of the bayonet? And we are all supposed to shout back, to kill, to kill. The sergeant now shouts, what does that make you? And we are all supposed to shout, a killer, a killer. And I said, what a thing to do to take ordinary, decent young men and make them shout that.
Well, may the fiddle sound, the banjo play the old hoedown. Dancers swinging round and round when I'm far away. Well, may the world go, the world go, the world go. Well, may the world go when I'm far away.
Try and do a good job with the people you know near you. It's nice to travel, but, and I suppose while you're young is the best time to travel. You learn by traveling. The world can be your university, as Maxim Gorky once said. But in the long run, find a part of the world that you really like and you can stick to. Might be the same town you were raised in, but it might be another place. Might be a valley, might be a desert, might be a swamp. But find some area that you really like enough so you're going to stick there the rest of your life.
Fresh may the breezes blow, clear may the streams flow. Blue above, green below, when I'm far away. Well, may the world go, the world go, the world go. Well, may the world go, when I'm far away.
I think the world's going to be saved by people who fight for their homes. This is the lesson of the American Revolution. That's what beat King George. It's all the farmers shooting out from behind the stone walls.
May the skiers turn, swimmers churn, lovers burn. Peace may the generals learn when I'm far away.
Everywhere I go, I tell this. When I meet somebody who says there's really no hope, you know, it's, things are going to get from worse to worse, and this is the last century of the human race, I tell them, did you expect to see our great Watergate president leave office the way he did? And they say, no, I guess I didn't. I said, did you expect the Pentagon to have to leave Vietnam the way it did? I didn't. I said, did you expect to see the Berlin Wall come down so peacefully the way it did? They said, no, I really didn't expect that. Then I said, did you expect to see Mandela, head of South Africa? No, no, I really didn't expect that. I thought he'd rot in jail forever, the rest of his life. Well, I said, if you couldn't predict those things, don't be confident that you can predict there's no hope.
Well, may the fiddle sound, the banjo play the old hoedown. Dancers swinging round and round when I'm far away. Well, may the world go, the world go, the world go. Well, may the world go when I'm far away. Fresh may the breezes blow, clear may the streams flow. Above, green below, when I'm far away. Well, may the world go, the world go, the
like spoken, then that's the thing I like about spoken word or storytelling a little bit more than writing, because like I read a lot of books, but to have it audibly described, like audiobooks almost, I think is a beautiful, to me is a more intricate art form. And I've had some Indigenous folks on this program before where they do say like, oh, Indigenous storytelling is like the form of media because of like written language just isn't there. And that's why I think storytelling specifically to get your message across, I think is a little, is a better way, quite frankly. And music too. Music is like also the universal language of like every cultural tradition has like a universal language.
And then when you combine them.
Yeah.
I mean, you really got it going.
Yeah.
Well, that's, I mean, your songs always have a story to them. That's what one of the things I love about them is that there's a story within every single song. Yeah. And that is that's a real gift to be able to do a form of lyrics. Yeah.
All right. We're going to probably wrap up some of the spoken word interview portion. And any lasting thoughts on the show? We got a lot of couple.
Come on down. Yeah. We dare you.
Yeah, we double dog dare you.
It's going to be on June 20th, right?
Yeah.
It's a Saturday, and it's at 7:30, I think, and it's only one show.
Yeah.
Only one chance.
Yeah.
That's it.
June 20th.
It's like a
something will happen. It always does.
If you wish to also laugh along with Larry and Kevin, you can check out the Dakota, dakotacooks.com, for more information on their upcoming performance on June 20th. And you can take anybody, your friends, your family, your fathers, your sons.
Yeah, yourself. I think that part
your
of it
daughter.
Is...
Your daughter.
Your
daughter, too. Yeah.
Your wife or your husband.
Right? I think, and some of this is, one of the things I love about it is, since my father isn't with me anymore either, this is a way to conjure him.
Oh.
And so even just to come and just be conjured of, and it doesn't even have to be a biological father. Yeah. Who are the, you know, there's so many fathers in all of our lives. And I think it is just that whatever that energy was, that'll to have that conjured can really, I think, it makes it a special evening for sure.
Oh, we do have a couple, I could probably shoehorn this in. I think of father figures in my life. I also think of like my male teachers.
Oh, yeah.
I think a lot about my male teachers growing up, especially since they were doing the subjects that I wanted to be in school for. Like my math teacher, my art teacher, Mr. Riley, Mr. Duggar, my astronomy teacher. I just remember those folks a lot.
Yeah. No, truly true. Yeah. Like my father passed away, I spent my whole life, seeking mentors and father figures and. And Pete Seeger was that to me. Mm. He was one of them. There are those that step in and take on that role, and they're to be thanked.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on air tonight.
Thank you.
And thank you. Again, you could check out dakotacooks.com for tickets and more information for Kevin Kling's and Larry Long's upcoming Father's Day performance. And then